Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our February meeting of the Are You Ready? Orange County Older Adult Advisory Commission, OCOAC. Everyone say that. And we are making a big deal about this of the public because we recently redid our bylaws and also modernized our name to be the Senior Citizens Advisory Council, and now we are OC Older Adult Advisory Commission. So I want to begin this meeting by thanking everyone here that's on the council and also people that are visiting for making Orange County a better 21st age. I know that we're all very committed to that cause, and I want to thank you for everything that you do every day, including getting here in the rain. Next, I would like to turn it over to Council Member Ken Hagman, who will give the inspiration.
So when I was asked to give the inspiration, I immediately came to mind two quotes I think of often when I'm doing my volunteer work. So one of them is quite very familiar to everybody, and it is, do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. And then the other one I like was from St. Zechariah, let us run like fools, not only to God, but also to our neighbor, who is the intermediary to whom we give what we cannot give to God. That was very nice.
Beautiful. Thank you, Ken. Thank you so much. And now we will have a pledge of allegiance with Nathan Still leading us.
Hand over your heart and repeat with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You. Before we go to roll call, I would like to welcome two new members and ask them to briefly introduce themselves. So first, Marty.
Briefly, Marty Simpile, I'm a council member in Zaria, and I serve on a number of other committees, but this will be my first meeting here, so see how everything goes. I'm glad to be here. Unfortunately, I've known Gene much too long.
In the cities.
And a retired police captain.
Oh, gotcha.
Oh,
and also, Howard, would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Howard Hart. I'm a council member from beautiful San Juan Capistrano.
Wonderful.
Didn't realize. Hi, my name is Dan Mudry. I'm in Sea Country, Senior Center of Laguna Niguel.
Great. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Brianna. I'm the District 2 Supervisor and Representative today. It's really nice to be here. It's pretty easy. It's my first meeting. So I'm going to do a few things. Go for things. Observe.
Okay, now we'll go on to roll call with our Secretary Dave Cook.
Good morning, all. Let's start with Charlene Ashendorf.
Present.
Debbie Baker.
Here.
Linda Buster Long. Okay. Lavelle Brewer.
Yeah. Yes.
Elizabeth Busick.
Present.
Jerry Chang.
Present.
Hilda Janinski.
You're going to be absent.
Okay. Meredith Chalamy.
Present.
Elaine Genway.
Going to be absent.
Howard Hart.
Here.
Okay, welcome. Ian Hernandez.
Here.
And Ken Peterman.
Here.
Marion Klinger.
Here.
Beth Levin. Levin.
They are going to be out there.
Crystal Mike.
Present.
Patty Mouton.
Mouton. I'm present. 10th grade French.
Okay. I want English.
Woodruff, present.
Robert Nelson.
Present.
Joni Nichols.
Yeah.
Rachel Owens.
Here.
John Pointer.
Here.
Jeffrey Rodriguez.
Awesome.
Irene Rose. Anita St. Matthews.
Absent.
Barney Simonot.
Here.
Barbara Slope.
Present.
Sandy Spain.
Present.
Nathan Steele.
Here.
Dave Jetlock. Cynthia Thatcher.
Absent.
Dave Wheeler. Here. And President, you have a call.
Thank you. And for those of you who are new, we have the ghost of Easter Seals. That happens throughout the meeting. We all get to be alarmed during the meeting, and you'll see that people have been here for a while, don't even look up anymore. So we don't know what it is, but it happens throughout the meeting. And Debbie, I'm sorry, can you introduce yourself as well?
Debbie Baker from Oklahoma, Council and Ghost Kid. Glad to be here.
Awesome. I'm glad that you're here as well. Nice to have more representatives all over Orange County. That's wonderful. It's very important. Okay, now we're on the agenda item number 5, secretary comments. Dave?
Yeah, are the timesheets available? I didn't see them at the table.
They were at our, yeah, I have one.
Right.
We know.
So there.
Agenda. Okay, sorry. They are attached to the agenda.
Thank you.
You are completing it for the month of January. And January will be the last month, I would assume, that we incorporate the subcommittees.
Mm-hmm.
And then there will be new sheets, probably modified sheets for the February report that will be issued in March. So, complete the sheets for January of 2024.
Yeah. And have them.
Return them to me before you leave. Are there any more of those? Can we get some copies?
Yeah, it should be on the back side of the agenda.
They're out of agendas.
Yes,
okay. The agenda that was
on
your
table. Yeah,
it's my way.
Sorry.
No, I gave mine away.
Oh, okay. Someone can have mine.
So for the new members, we traditionally had, in our bylaws, had a requirement of volunteering 8 hours a month and then submitting it paperwork. With our new bylaws, that will be optional starting next month. It's great for us to be able to include our volunteerism. So this is something that we're going forward, but on an optional basis. Some professionals aren't able to meet that number of hours. Okay, now we are on to public comments, item number 6. At this time, members of the public may address the commission regarding any items within our subcommittee jurisdiction. Do we have any?
No.
Okay. Great. All right, well, we already handled introductions, so we did that a little bit out of order. So now we are on to our presentation, and we are welcoming John Cleveland, the senior deputy county council, to talk to us about our favorite topic, the Brown Act.
Yeah. Edmund. Okay. Good morning. Thank you for having me. We're going to do a quick review of the Brown Act and the bylaws. My name is John Cleveland, Senior Deputy County Council. I advise OCCR and several boards, commissions, councils, committees associated with OCCR. I was here last year. Done a couple of updates, but a lot of this will be review, especially for many of you who are elected officials. going to talk about the Brown Act basics. We're going to cover standing and ad hoc committees in particular, because I understand there's been a couple of questions, especially with those new bylaws and eliminating some of the prior standing committees. We're going to talk about violations and enforcement, what happens when the Brown Act is violated, what are the remedies, what happens, meetings and agendas, public participation in these public meetings, and then we're going to look at general bylaws concepts that are applicable to all the county species, and then the specific commission's bylaws and how the Brown Act is provided for in those bylaws and ensures compliance. Okay, so the Brown Act requires that all meetings be open and public. That's the fundamental premise of the Brown Act. It was enacted in 1953, and it's changed a little bit over time, but the basic rule is that meetings of legislative bodies must be open and public, and all actions and deliberations and discussions are an important point. It's not just action, it's not just vote. Brown Act requires open and public deliberations and discussions. The purpose is to facilitate public participation in the government and avoid the potential misuse of the democratic process by secret voting, backroom deals, things like that. So the Brown Act applies to two defined terms, legislative bodies of local agency. A legislative body is governing board of a local agency or any local board created by statute. That includes commissions, committees, and boards like this commission. Local agency includes counties and boards, commissions, and agencies thereof. So let's talk about standing committees. Standing committees are the legislative body or legislative bodies if they have either of the following: continuing subject matter jurisdiction, or a meeting schedule fixed by a charter, ordinance, resolution, or formal act and letter vote of the legislative body. So let me ask you a question. If the standing committee is comprised less than a quorum of a governing body, is it still subject to the Brown Act?
Yes.
If it has continuing subject matter jurisdiction or has a meeting schedule fixed by formal action of the legislative body, it's subject to the Brown Act. So be careful if you're trying to form maybe an ad hoc committee and you say, oh, well, look, the ad hoc is less than a quorum, then we don't need to do the public notice and agenda and right. That's not true if it's going to have a continuing subject matter jurisdiction. So now let's look at ad hoc. I don't really like the term ad hoc. Temporary is really a much better word for it, right? Because the word temporary underscores what an ad hoc or how this exception applies. A temporary advisory committee composed solely of the members of the legislative body, so you can't bring in outside community experts or anything like that are less than a quorum of the legislative body, is not itself a legislative body. So that's when this exception applies. You need to have a limited single purpose. The ad hoc committee can't be perpetual, and it must be dissolved once the specific task is complete. In the past, yes, sir.
Sorry, did I hear you say something about bringing in outside expertise into an ad hoc?
That's right. If you were to make an outside expert part of that ad hoc, you would be running afoul of one of the requirements that it be comprised solely of members of the legislative body. It's not to say you can't get advice, but you can't make that outside person a member of that.
Right.
Did I answer your question?
I want to talk to you later.
Yeah. And please, we'll have an opportunity for questions at the end of this presentation. But if there's anything in depth, specific, sensitive, you're welcome to contact staff and we put you in contact with me.
Thank you.
All right. So here's another pop quiz for you. If the legislative body creates an ad hoc committee and states that the ad hoc will not have continuing jurisdiction, but in actuality, the ad hoc exercises continuing subject matter jurisdiction and is not limited in time, is this ad hoc committee subject to the Brown Act?
Yes.
Yes, of course. Of course, because you can't put form over substance. if this type of a scenario would be subject to the Brown Act. Okay, so we talked about legislative bodies. Now let's look at the defined term meetings. Brown Act applies when meetings occur. A meeting is a congregation of the majority of the members of a legislative body to discuss, deliberate, or take action on any item within the subject matter jurisdiction of that legislative body. So conceivably, you could have the majority of the members outside on the stairs talking about something that's not within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body to be okay. The problem with that, it looks bad and you might slip and you could have it quickly fall into a discussion regarding the subject matter, and then you have a Brown Act violation. The defined term meeting includes gatherings where members discuss matters within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body. So you have to watch out for lunches, breakfast, social events, not just situations where votes are taken, the discussions and deliberations are covered by the Brown Act. So let's look at serial meetings. This is where you can kind of get tripped up and inadvertently have a meeting. Serial meetings are where the majority of the members of the legislative body use a series of communications of any kind, direct or through intermediaries. Yeah, that could be a daisy chain scenario, one on to the next, or a hub and spoke scenario, where there's a single person who's acting as a conduit and conveying the positions of the other legislative members. And you could form a serial meeting. One-way briefings, on the other hand, are okay. And that's generally where staff will be briefing a member of the legislative body, but avoiding conveying the positions on a vote from the other members. So the staff person can brief one way, but can't act as a conduit or hub and spoke to create a serial meeting. Similarly, legal memorandum from county council, two members of the legislative body are not meetings as defined under the Brown Act. So last time I was here, Mr. Hernandez asked about newer technology. I don't think I had too many exciting things to say. So I tried to create this slide for you.
Thank you.
And this will be another pop quiz. So serial meetings are prohibited even when using electronic communications. And now we have all these different types of electronic communications. So when can prohibited serial meetings occur? Replying all to an email message?
Yes.
Discussing an issue in an internet chat room?
Yeah.
Posting a like on a social media platform?
Yes.
Discussing an issue on a platform that features messages that are only temporary and disappear? Does that help? Using a member's AI robot to communicate the member's position on an issue that falls within the subject matter jurisdiction of that member's legislative body to other members of the legislative body. I have a Roomba. I don't have an AI robot yet, but maybe someone could say, hey, my robot did it. I didn't do it. So the answer is all in the above, of course. Each one of these things could create a serial meeting where everyone's discussing an issue or even making their positions on an upcoming vote. No. The most common one is replying to all of the email messages, right? That's, I put newer on there. That's really not that new. We've been working with email for a long time, but still it happens. People will send out a group email where everyone's listed and there's an inadvertent reply all when someone's discussing the issue and then you have a problem. Yes, sir.
What we tend to see a lot with electeds is that they'll go on Facebook and make a note about, hey, you know, this piece of property just came up. We're really excited that we're going to get this, blah, blah. And then, of course, all your friends and then other council people put a like on there. That's a Brown Act violation. And so I stay off social media, and I'll open this here. I don't like that for that very reason. As soon as you hit like, your position as elected has been established. So just be real cautious.
Thank you for that.
Would posting it originally be a violation?
It's not a violation unless other electeds weigh in on it. That's the problem.
Electeds is the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the same thing.
Okay.
And that's what ours do. Our other council members love saying, oh, yeah, Mike, good job, Mike. Yeah.
I have a question for you. This is a campaign year.
Right.
A big one. council members. Some are running for re-election, some potential new members are running, and they want to know that they support a particular issue. So how is sounds like they violate all the Brad Act and how they get their position. And I support this, or I don't support this.
Well, those campaigns would be outside the subject matter jurisdiction of this legislative body.
No, I'm talking about like city council. About this body's probably pretty easy, but let's just say for city council, but we had a majority run in the 1-2 year period, and 2 years have been set up a minority. But when they have three running for the 5 seats, they all might want to campaign, hey, I support this, but I object to this. Sounds like a Brad Act violation. But they have to campaign to other people what they really support, up to people who they like.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, candidates for office can voice their opinions. And I think that getting into the weeds on campaign free speech and the ability to campaign as opposed to making your position known on an item that's going to be on the agenda for one of the city councils that you're talking about are kind of two different things and a little bit outside the subject matter for this.
About two different things. If I support, the city should do this, it should, be an advocate this position, and all the other council members running with me do the same thing. Tell me needs to know that. Yeah, I want somebody that supports this.
No, he's saying it's outside of this presentation.
Yeah,
that's
correct.
The older,
yeah, the purpose of this discussion is to talk about your role here in that time around.
Generalize that here. Maybe half of us want to do something like talk to supervisors.
Well, I'm giving legal advice on that.
All right. Well, thank you for the question. Let's look at six narrow exceptions to the definition of visa. We have individual contacts or conversations between members of a legislative body and any other person. So that candidate for office could talk to his staff, constituents, and consultants on a one-off basis. You could also attend a conference open to the public that addresses issues of general interest to the public, provided the members do not discuss issues within the subject matter jurisdiction of their legislative body. This caveat here applies to all six exceptions. You can't go to a conference or community meeting or a notice meeting of another local agency or a social or ceremonial occasion if you go there and then engage in discussions or deliberations about the issues that are within the subject matter jurisdiction of your body. And each of these are very fact specific and nuanced. So I'd encourage you to contact staff, you can contact me and ask any questions if you think one of these are going to come up. But I wanted to make you aware of them, at least at a high level here. When we have conferences open to the public, and open to the public is the key thing there. It can't be like a private conference. Community meetings. Members of the legislative body may go to and open a notice meeting for another local agency. So, for example, members of this legislative body can attend a city council meeting, provided they don't discuss the matters within the subject matter of this legislative body.
Unless they're the designated representative from this group to go to that council to do exactly that.
Thanks for the comment.
Yeah, and in that case, that one person isn't going to have a majority this body. So.
No.
Peer legal, social, or ceremonial, you have to be careful with these because, again, it's kind of like, well, yeah, can we go to lunch and not discuss the subject matter? Theoretically, but weddings, funerals, farewell receptions are examples of social ceremonial engagements. Just engage in that with caution. Attendance at an open and notice standing committee meeting provided the members attend as only attend as observers. So, members of this legislative body could attend a standing committee meeting and sit and observe, but not participate actively or engage in discussions. Okay, let's look at the agenda and notice requirements for regular meetings. Regular meetings are typically what you're going to be involved in this commission. Regular meetings must state the time and place for the meeting. As you know, the agenda needs to be published at least 72 hours in advance at a location that's freely accessible and on the public agency's website. Must contain a brief general description of each item of business to be transacted or discussed. Also, pause there. So the agenda really needs to have a sufficient description of the item that's going to be discussed or acted upon in order to comply with the Brown Act. Sometimes agendas are a little cryptic, and that's probably not sufficient under the letter of the law. Do legislative bodies get away with it? Yes, they do. But the best practice is to notify the public of exactly what's going to be discussed, and so that the public can choose to either participate or not.
Quick question.
Yes.
Does this committee have a 24-hour rule or not?
Pertaining to what?
Cities might have meetings with 24-hour notice on emergencies or important items.
Yeah.
That question again, you're just.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that rule on the special meeting side. So, except as otherwise provided by law, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda. This is a very important rule because it's very tempting to want to just get business done, right? It's like if it's not on the agenda, you can't take action. So try and have foresight, get everything on the agenda. If you don't, try and have discipline and ask staff to put that item on a future agenda so you can properly discuss it and take action on it in the future. So let's get to the 24-hour notice. This is for special meetings. Special meetings come up when something a little bit more urgent is going on, the notice requirements are less, you need to provide notice by posting the notice and delivering written notice. Each member of the legislative body and any member of the media who has already requested that type of notice. And that notice needs to be personally delivered 24 hours before the time of the meeting. Just like regular meetings, the agenda needs to state exactly what's going to be transacted or discussed. And you cannot take action or discuss business other than what's listed on the agenda. Same notice and agenda requirements.
I don't think we've ever had one of them, by the way. Get excited with them.
All right. Well, then you're very likely not going to have emergency meetings either, but I'll just let you know.
Emergency? Remember that. Everything's an emergency, but.
An emergency is defined as a work stoppage, a crippling activity, or other activity that severely impairs the public health and safety of both. The special meeting notice requirements generally apply, except for the 24-hour notice. Less than 24 hours. They have telephonic notice to the members of the legislative body and the municipality before the meeting happens. So the Brown Act, one of the main purposes of the Brown Act is public participation. The public needs to be able to see the agenda, decide whether to participate, and then have an opportunity to speak. And there's generally two opportunities for public comment. That's on specific items appearing on the agenda. The public needs to have a chance to discuss, to make public comments before that item is called, not after. And then there needs to be a general public comment period for any item of business within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body. The Brown Act prevents legislative bodies from making secret votes, using secret ballots, and public agencies need to publicly report the votes taken at each meeting. All right, here's another question here. Non-agenda items. When can an item not appearing on that posted agenda be discussed or acted upon? The Brown Act provides that no official action can be taken on non-agendized matters, but members of the legislative body, for example, may briefly respond to comments or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights, or provide a reference to staff, or give direction to staff to bring an item back on a future agenda, or request that staff report back at a future meeting. So these are kind of the short list of things that can happen when an item hasn't been properly agenda. It's not that you can't say anything about it. You just need to make sure that it's one of these references to information, direction to staff, response to the public comment. Okay, so what happens when the Brown Act is violated? Criminal penalties are potential. It's very rare and it requires intent. If a member of a legislative body intends to deprive someone of public information and that member knows or has reason to know that the public's entitled to receive that information, could be found guilty of this. Much more common is civil enforcement. And that can take the form of a civil injunction where a district attorney or an interested member of the public brings a lawsuit to enjoin or stop future violations of that Brown Act, or a court action to invalidate a action taken in violation of the Brown Act. So some action that's taken by your body that didn't comply could be declared null and void by the court. And attorney's fees and costs are also available to a prevailing plaintiff in such a lawsuit. That's a significant deterrent for violating the Brown Act. All right, we're going to turn to general bylaws concepts now that are applicable to all the county's BCCs, including this commission, and talking about it because these general concepts kind of help you understand your own bylaws. So the county's BCCs, that's the boards, commissions, and committees, all have bylaws that kind of serve as a roadmap, outline the functions and purposes of the BCC, and both the BCCs are advisory, like this one, where the Board of Supervisors sets the legislative policy for the county, and the BCC are advisory to the Board of Supervisors. Citizen members on the BCCs provide the public with a channel for communication and input to the board and provide an opportunity for citizens to participate. So we talked a little bit about this. BCCs are advisory. The bylaws describe the procedure by which the BCC to advocate, communicate with the public. Generally, all the bylaws provide that the BCCs don't engage in political advocacy. They're advisory to the Board of Supervisors and not to the public or to the state legislators. Some BCCs are excited to do their work. But the county Board of Supervisors is the one that's setting policy. They have a legislative platform, and the County Executive Office of Legislative Affairs is designated as the county's lead legislative office. So the policies that the board sets and that are coordinated through the County Executive Office of Legislative Affairs should be consistent with all the county's advisory committees. County staff from Orange County Community Resources and the CEO Office of Legislative Affairs can help draft communications, advocacy letters, statements that might be put out, or positions on legislation that a BCC may want to get involved with. But what's important here is coordination between the BCC staff and CEO Legislative Affairs. All right, now let's look at your specific commission bylaws. The purpose and functions, just like all those other general BCCs, are set out in your new BCCs just recently adopted. The purpose of the commission is to carry out advisory functions which further the county's mission, developing and coordinating community-based systems and services. Just at a high level, that includes the provision of services to older persons with the goal of maximizing these services, the development and administration of the area plans, the master plan, and potentially serving on procurement of animals where the county's procuring goods and services and maybe a subject matter expert. Article 3B provides the functions of the commission. Again, it's advisory. It's advisory on all of these matters that are important to older adults, any homelessness, protected from poverty, hunger, abuse, neglect, and exploitation, securing access to transportation, combating loneliness, and inclusion, equity, and aging. The bylaws actually explicitly provide that the Board of Supervisors is the entity responsible for setting policy and for the direction and oversight of the adult program. So this is kind of a reminder that your efforts here should be aligned with the County Board of Supervisors. Okay, so your bylaws also specifically address standing and ad hoc committees, and I'm bringing this up because we talked about it in connection with the Brown Act generally, and I know the questions come up, so let's look at what your bylaws say about standing committees. Your commission recently approved the bylaws and removed several standing committees except for the executive committee. So in the ASR that went to the Board of Supervisors, when they approved those new bylaws, it said, The issues previously addressed by the prior standing committees will be addressed by this body as a whole or by the executive committee. In Article 7B describes how the executive committee works, says the executive committee shall hold meetings at the request of the chairperson or at least two times per year and will conform with the Brown Act. Your bylaws also discuss ad hoc committees. And since the chairperson may establish an ad hoc committee of less than a quorum, you saw that in the bylaws portion of this presentation, to accomplish time-limited tasks, again, consistent with the Brown Act, the term of appointment shall be for a period required to fulfill the purpose of the ad hoc. Ad hoc's limited purpose. And that's key. The ad hocs can't be unlimited in time and purpose. They have to have a specific task and a specific kind of end. They need to be disbanded once they have fulfilled that purpose. And the ad hoc committee chairperson shall be appointed by the commission chairperson. All right. So the bylaws also require compliance with the Brown Act. So even if you weren't a Brown Act expert and attended today's presentation, if you just read the bylaws, you know that your commission requires compliance with the Brown Act. The bylaws explicitly state that all of your meetings shall be open and public and notice in performance with the Brown Act. The bylaws set out the notice requirements 72 to 24 hours for regular and special meetings if you really don't have special meetings. And it provides that the county will prepare and publicly post and distribute all the agendas for the commission meetings. Of course, agendas according to the Brown Act, and again, proposed amendments to the bylaws shall be submitted in writing in conformance with the Brown Act. So we've looked at the Brown Act, we've looked at principles generally applicable to all BCCs, including your own, and then we've looked at your specific bylaws, and we've kind of come full circle. I'm gonna open it up to any questions you may have. Yes.
Okay, so as the chair of a new ad hoc committee, then I'm going to ask for some members to join that committee. We can, and there's only three or four of us. We can communicate by email. Do we have an agenda before we have a meeting? No.
Yeah.
Well, first, I always say, well, make sure your ad hoc is for a limited purpose of time. It's going to be disbanded once yes. that purpose is
yes. correct. Okay.
Your ad hoc needs to have less than a quorum. And as long as it has less than a quorum, you're free to communicate. But you shouldn't inadvertently involve other members.
Okay, thank you.
So what do we mean then?
And gentlemen, there has to be, the chair has to set up that ad hoc committee. That has not been set up yet. So that action has to be taken by the chair.
Yes, well, we voted on it.
We voted
on several meetings ago.
It's going to be discussion item 10B. Okay, thank you.
I saw a hand on
you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. John, LA, well, first, could you correct the slides in the future? The yellow font is awfully hard to read. Back here.
Yes.
Thank you very much. I had some help designing these slides, so I'm going to blame the help.
Yeah. It has a tendency to just blur into the background.
It's even worse to be trying to print it. So. Good point. Thank you.
On another bill, SB, I think it is 411, was a provision and amendment to the Brown Act for Los Angeles exclusively. Have you seen that?
No, not familiar with that. I'm sorry.
They created a community board, I'll call it. I'm not getting the title correct. In lieu of a legislative body. If you would look at that, I think that would be interesting. It's only exclusive to Los Angeles. Senator Fortino was the individual that was in charge of or leads the appropriations committee for the state. He was able to get some exclusive provision passed for Los Angeles that basically creates a entirely different meeting format for bodies such as, if a body like this fits that criteria. So they call it a community body.
Community body, more flexibility.
Yeah.
Just for LA.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's a test. Okay, they put a two-year provision there, and then they're going to come back and revisit it. Portantino will be termed out, so maybe that was related to it as well. But just something I thought was pretty interesting, especially when the Brown Act is so specifically defined in terms of what you can and can't do.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. The flexibility sounds great because these rules really can be for us.
Yeah, just an FYI.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, John. This was really, really valuable. Yeah,
thank you, for
thank you, John. All right, so now we are on item number 9, Senior Center and Community Liaison Update.
One more presentation.
Okay. Oh, I thought that we were down on 12 for this. Okay.
Oh, no, that's okay. We will do that. Yeah, thank you.
Now I see it.
All right. Well, lots of great information today. Thank you. Sorry for that misunderstanding. Lots of great information. Claudia Harris, Director, Office on Aging and Veteran Service Office. I want to start by saying welcome to those new members, Marnie, Howard, Debbie, and our public members present here today. Lots of great information as John has provided us our overview that relates to your advisory board here and things to consider to make sure that we abide by all our regulations. Office on Aging, specifically, you are the advisory body for that. We will provide a little bit of an overview of your role towards the end of the presentation. One little housekeeping, if I may ask, is as we go through our programs, we have a great presentation, lots of information for you today, and lots of questions that may arise from that. If I may ask, if we can hold those questions towards the end of the presentation, just so that we can be a little bit mindful of our time today. So I will start off Office on Aging overview. We have a wonderful team, and I will introduce every single one of our managers and members here present. We are a 21 staff deep in terms of the ones providing the direct, not direct services per se, but direct support of our aging programs. However, we have quite a group of members behind the scenes as well that help support, of course, on the administrative side of the house and ensure that we have that support. Not included in this org chart here, as you see, I have 8 managers, and then below our managers, we also have our staff specialists who support a lot of the functions, a lot of our contractors and community partners, in addition to our direct programs that we run in-house. In addition to that, our information and assistance call center staff, we have 4 center staff that are dedicated to that, and you will hear a little bit more about that call center. So I'll start off with the bulk of our Office on Aging programs are funded by the Older Americans Act. For those of you who are first to the information, first time hearing, Office on Aging is the state designated area agency on aging. The area agencies on aging nationwide are supported by the Older Americans Act, which provides the regulations, and they tell us pretty much what we can and cannot do and how do we administer Office on Aging area agency programs that are funded by the Older Americans Act. In addition to the Older Californians Americans Act, not included here, but no, I'm like noting myself some changes to make in the next presentation. So some of those that are included, which are also part of our area plan, which I'll provide that update as we go down our meeting today. These are supportive services. These are Title III programs. Title IIIC, per the Older Americans Act, are all your elderly nutrition programs, your health promotion programs, which is your 3D programs. Title IIIE are the family support programs. Senior employment included, which is your Title V, and then your Title VII A, which is your elder abuse prevention.
that includes your ombudsman program under that. You will go through each of these managers as you meet them and hopefully provide a little bit more in depth of what these programs are. And then we have our California Department of Aging program. So these are programs that are part of that area plan, however, funded a little bit separately because we do receive federal funds as well. These includes the Health and Advocacy Program, most of you know as HICAP. We have our MIPA, which is our Medicare Improvement Program, Supplemental Nutrition, like your CalFresh and your SNAP Nutrition Program, supporting nutrition information. And then, of course, some of our local funded programs. So we do have opportunities to sometimes receive some collaborative efforts and grants from our local entities, which include your senior non-emergency medical transportation. Several of our programs and the way that we are designed is the bulk of our services are contracted services. I'm going to say roughly about 80% of our services are contracted out through a means of request for proposals. And these contracted service providers are throughout the county providing our requested services. But then we also have some that are in-house, and those are is what we call our direct programs. That includes our information and assistance call center and our aging community resource connection and your dignity fall prevention programs that we support in addition to our health promotion. Most of you know it as our DBE health promotion education programs. Let's see, and without further ado, actually before I move on, I know you've seen lots of members behind the public, and this is our team of managers that are joining us today. So I want to extend my gratitude and thank you for them for joining us today and giving you all this information. Evan Alford, who manages our some of our 3D and nutrition programs, and she'll go and provide a little bit more in-depth information on that. Thank you,
Mary. Well, good morning. I'm going to go ahead and talk about some of the programs I manage. And so three of them, which we're going to lump together as a kind of service that supports our elderly nutrition program, which I'll talk about on the next slide. But those three services that are under that are in the supportive services category are case management, in-home services, and transportation. So we have two service providers for that. It's Meals on Wheels in Orange County and Ageable Senior Services. So those two providers provide case management services and to their clients using, and a lot of times they use in-home supportive services for some of those clients that are on case management. So those programs really go hand in hand a lot of times. And so they use them kind of across clients. And then there's also the transportation that is provided. Both of our providers tend to provide transportation to get to the congregational site. So that's for the most part, that's how that transportation funding is used in that instance. And it's getting those congregational clients to the congregate sites in the community. So our elderly nutrition program is comprised of congregate meals and home delivered meals. So our congregate meals are those community, those senior lunches that you all see at the senior centers or different community centers out pretty much in almost every city. And so it just provides that meal, socialization, gets people out and connects them to others as well as maybe different activities in that center. So people are out and have that opportunity to socialize and not be isolated. Then we have our home delivered meals. So those are for those that are more frail, homebound, isolated for whatever reason. And so that they get that meal. Our program provides three meals a day. So they are getting a full day of food with each delivery every day. And then part of this program is having a registered dietitian. So we have a dietitian that is under our office. We have a contract or an MOU with HCA. So we work with the HCA dietitian to manage the program. She oversees basically, coordinates and supervises in a sense with our provider registered dietitian. So each AgeWell and Meals on Wheels each have a RD that Rachel, our AAA RD, works with to make sure that the program is being delivered in the way that it's required. There's a lot of regulations with this program, and especially around the meals. So it's very specific on what goes into each meal. And so, right, that one of Rachel's roles is to review the menus that are submitted and to approve them and approve them so that they meet the requirements under the Older Americans Act and Older Californians Act. One new program that we have that we're going to have this year, it's one-time funding, at least at this point it's one-time funding, is intergenerational activities. So this is the purpose of this, is to really connect, you know, those generations, the older adults to kids or different, you know, adult ages to seniors. So there's different ways that this is going to be done. We are working on getting all of those contracts executed as we speak. So we're going to have five service providers. So it's Meals on Wheels, Aidwell, Easter Seals, and Access California. And we currently have an MOU with our OC Public Libraries. So each of these providers are doing things a little differently. Meals on Wheels is really focusing on trying to bring people, kind of different generations, to the senior centers and senior lunch, and to provide special activities that will, you know, get the different generations connected. Aidwell is looking at bringing volunteers into the home of our home builder meal clients and having that connection in that way. Easter Seals is connecting their adult daycare population with some local preschools that are right located near them. So they're coordinating activities to bring those groups together. Access is doing several different types of community event, activities with the different community groups they have connections with. And then OC Public Libraries is doing a lot of public events and a lot of author events. They're doing cooking demonstrations and really reaching out to, with, you know, the access through the libraries, you know, that they are used by, you know, the range of ages. So providing activities that will hopefully engage the different ages. So.
All right, so I think. Good morning, everyone. My name is Marco Rodriguez. I manage all the direct services at the Office on Aging. I was here last month, so those of you who were here last month on ADRC presentation, you probably recognize me from that. So as part of our direct service, our front lines of our office is the Information Assistance Call Center. So that front line connects all of those individuals who are calling for resources and referrals to services available for older adults, caregivers, veterans. We are the front lines for that. So what we do is our call center staff will do an assessment over the phone, see what type of resources may fit for the individual, and then connect them to those resources. So again, we link individuals to the services and opportunities available throughout the county. We also do follow-up calls. So if we do provide resources, we will do a follow-up call within 5 to 7 business days to make sure that the resources that were provided were able to connect with those resources. And if not, we'll try to provide other resources that may be able to fit. The IDA call center is funded by Title 3B and Title 3E, that's for caregivers. We also recently have funds available for our call center through aging and disability funding. So aging and disability resource connection funding. Another direct service that we have through our office is our Title 3D health promotion. So what that is their classes, their evidence-based classes. It depends on what class it is, but it could be in a 6-week class or an 8-week class, depending on what class it is. Again, they're evidence-based, so the classes that we provide are a matter of balance, which is a fall prevention class. That one is an 8-week class. They're usually once per week for about 2.5 hours and 3 hours per day. And then we have the chronic disease self-management class and our diabetes self-management class. All of this is funded by Title 3D of the Older Americans Act. Aging and Disability Resource Connection, that's what I presented on last month. So that's the ADRC for short. This is a partnership between our office, the Office on Aging, and the Dale McIntosh Center, which is the independent aging center for the County of Orange. The state requires those two entities, so the Area Agency on Aging and the Independent Living Center, to be core partners of this project. So it is a no-wrong-door service model, meaning whatever agency, partner agency you enter through, they will connect you to the services that you need without having to get like form transfer or anything like that. We do have a formal referral process where they do refer digitally to the agency that they need. That way the person doesn't have to try to tell their story over and over again over the phone. As one of the core services I mentioned earlier is the Information Assistance Call Center, which is enhanced information referral. So that's a service we provide. And we are also the front line for the ADRC. That's what's on all our marketing materials and ads is going to be our Information Assistance Call Center. The other three services are our short-term service coordination. That could be something as simple as transportation. It's something that's not needed long-term. And then options counseling through Dale McIntosh Center. We do have options counselors that are able to provide a little bit more in-depth services for a person that maybe needs a little bit more time with the person and try to go over all of their options. So it's more of just a more in-depth referral process, if you may. And then we have transition services. That is transitioning a person from a long-term care living facility back into their home. The goal of all ADRC is to try to keep people living in their homes independently. As part of this, and as part of another direct service that we have two fall prevention, home modifications and residential repair services. So one of them is Dignity at Home. The other one is Title IIIB Residential Repairs and Modifications. What these are, it provides funding for Dignity at Home includes older adults and those with disabilities of all ages. Title IIIB is only intended for older adults 60 and older, but it does provide funding for people to, if they need minor home modifications in their home, to have those done free of charge. So if they need handrails, if they need toilet seat risers, if they need maybe to fix some loose flooring, things of that nature. It does not include like a total bathroom repair or remodel. We've had people obviously, you know, like they have a big leak in the roof, and obviously that's gonna cause a fault, you know. That can cause fault, right? Meaning having a wet floor. But unfortunately, we can't cover like a roof repair or anything like that. It's intended for minor home modifications. So just keep that in mind. And again, to connect to any of these services, the front line is gonna be the Office on Aging's Call Center, which will have the number at the end of the presentation.
Marco, these are all income based.
They were, not anymore. So Dignity at Home is not income based anymore. It does not matter the amount of income that you make. You just have to meet the, like have fallen within the past couple months or at risk of falling. So that's, and Dignity at Home again is for all ages versus Title IIIB is more intended for older adults 60 and over. And both of these services, the service provider is Dale McIntosh Center. So even if they call our call center, we do a referral to them, and then they do all of the assessment over the calls for to see what program they might be eligible for.
No questions though, till then.
So again, the service provider is Dale McIntosh. They'll provide the services for this. They do the in-home assessment. They see if any modification needs to be done, and if so, then they'll go ahead and proceed with that. And sometimes it is common to where they combine funding sources depending on the cost of the project. They can't combine funding sources. The other program that we have at the direct service is Senior Farmers Market. That is going to be coming up. We just got an email that is starting to come up. Last year it came a little late. It's normally from May through September. We're hoping to get them by May, but we don't know yet. But if any individual interested in this program can call our call center. This one is income-based, and it also is age. So you have to be 60 and over. You must reside in Orange County, and then low income, 185% of the poverty level. We do have a sheet that will show what that income limit is. So it is all self-attestation, but they do some kind of form saying that they meet all the criteria. The only thing we do require is we do have their, make sure that they have an ID so that we see proof of age. That's one big thing that we look for. But what this program is it provides, last year was $50, so I'm hoping it's continuing the same. Usually they don't lower it. So it's a $50, like a little check booklet. They're $10 each, so it's like a little check. It's as good as cash. There's five $10 book of checks in there, it's a little booklet. Each person who's eligible gets one, even if it's a husband and wife together, it doesn't matter. They're both eligible to get one. It doesn't have to be, it's not one per household. So they get these $50 check booklets that are good at participating in the markets, and it's as good as cash. We do let them know that not to, well, to spend the whole $10 in one spot, because they will not give you change. So if it's you know, $9.99, they're gonna give you pennies. So just buy something else, you know, if you pick the $10, if you have to put $2 out of your pocket, they'll go. So we invite them that. We give them a list of participating farmers markets. There used to be a lot more participating because they had to get approved through the state to participate. Pre-pandemic, there was more. Now there's less, but there still is a farmers market, participating farmers market, pretty much throughout the whole county. So we give them that list to show which farmer markets are participating for that. Again, it's as good as cash. They can pick those up through our office. Right now, like I said, we're hoping by May, but people can start calling by, you know, April, just to get more information to see, you know, when is that going to start. We get calls throughout the year for this program because it is a need throughout the county that people really, really like to use these checkbooks for this new farmer's market. So thank you guys for your time. I'm going to pass it over to Farrah Lawless, who will continue with the presentation. Board of Service.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for your time. I'm Farrah Lawless, one of the program managers. I work through the adult daycare program as a staff. Actually, one of our contracts is with Mr. Seals, so our host for the day. Adult daycare is what it sounds like. It's a community-based program that provides non-medical personal care to dependents who are age 60 years of age and older in a supervised and protective setting, which is congregate. So there's a gathering there for a portion of the day. So this can include activities that are done together, which could be social, recreational, training, counseling, rehabilitation, and some medication assistance. Our service providers for the program are Alzheimer's Orange County, Easterfield, and Wheels on Wheels Orange. Great, so we're going to go on to community services. This is an umbrella term for two programs that fall within it. That's cash material aid and senior activities. These are funded through our Older Americans Act credit free funds. Cash material aid is a program that provides you assistance, like it's a tangible assistance that is either a form of a commodity, such as like a grocery bag or rental assistance. So if you're having, if you're struggling paying rent, there's rentals that can be provided directly to the landlords. It's not a cash based program where you get to walk away with cash, but there's assistance provided in the form of cash to, and then vouchers. So that's another component of this program. Senior activities is similar to adult daycare, but this is not for dependents, older adults only. It's just what it sounds like. It's like a social gathering type of a program, which provides physical, social, psychological, economic, educational, recreational, and creative needs for people who are age 60 and above. Our current service providers for these programs are Avatar, City of Fullerton, and Access California. Moving on to CalFresh Expansion. CalFresh Expansion is actually a very vast program. So it actually is funded from CPSS, which has been funneled to the California Department of Aging, who funds us for the program. This program actually provides outreach to individuals who are receiving SSI, SSP benefits. And it's not just solely to them, but it's just to all of our older adults, but especially targeted to them because at one point, SSI, SSP recipients were not eligible to receive CalFresh. So this is something that we want to bring forward, that people know that even though they are receiving SSI and SSP, Social Security income, they're still eligible to receive CalFresh. So program or services under this program include CalFresh pre-screening,
CalFresh application assistance and just building partnerships with other community-based organizations so they can collaborate and provide this or reach out to older adults in our community. So there's another program. This, again, is also connected to CalFresh. This program is a evidence-based nutrition education program. So what it aims to do is to assist older adults in making healthier, smarter choices when it comes to purchasing food with their CalFresh dollars. So this program aims to prevent obesity, and the way they do that is they use policy systems and environmental changes. What those are we identify needs in the community, and based off of those needs, we try to make a policy or a change in policy to better serve older adults when it comes to their nutrition needs. Other services under that program include indirect activities, which are essentially flyers, information, community events where we're, you know, promoting what eating healthy looks like, and then direct education activities. These direct education activities can be twofold. It can either involve education on nutrition, or they could be physical activity. So there are either of those, and there's a list of curriculums that are provided to us by the California Department of Aging, and we use those to provide the service. As you can see, this is still, it's a new program to the Office on Aging. We hadn't received funding for this program in the past, so we're still trying to get it off the ground. Our sister agency, HCA, which is the healthcare agency, Orange County Healthcare Agency, is working with us to help us get that program going. And we also have an RFP underway, so we're hoping to get some providers that can provide this program.
Here in Orange County. And that should conclude
my programs. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Norton Waters, Office on Aging. So the first program I have here for you today is our legal assistance program. It's provided by Community Legal Aid SoCal. It's a Title III program funded under the Older Americans Act that provides legal assistance to people that are 60 or older. Legal assistance could be advice, counseling, they can go up to direct representation, although funding is limited. So typically, resources are targeted to seniors that are either greatest social or economic need, which can be frail, disabled, low income, minority, older adults. That said, there's also priority legal services. They assist with a wide variety of legal services, but a few priority areas that they assist with are housing, income maintenance, elder abuse, and consumer addictions.
Can you say that again? Housing and elder abuse.
Oh yeah, no problem. Housing, income maintenance, elder abuse, and consumer issues.
Consider
what issues. A few other programs that I manage are operated by Council on Aging in Southern California. First is our Elder Abuse Prevention Program. It's basically an education-based program that assists with helping identify and detect instances of elder abuse. It received a very small amount of funding. It is actually funded by both the county and the Older Americans Act. The other program is our long-term care ombudsman program that's also operated by Council on Aging. Essentially, they're going into nursing facilities and they're looking for signs of elder abuse, but they're also responsible for just providing coverage across the county at all of our long-term care facilities. They'll work with our licensing agencies and law enforcement in any instances of elder abuse. And the last two programs are also operated by Council on Aging. They sort of go hand in hand. They're both a mouthful. The first is our health insurance counseling advocacy program. It's part of a statewide system of SHIPs, which are known as state health insurance assistance programs. So here in California, we know that it's high cap. It essentially provides Medicare beneficiaries and people that are soon to be eligible for Medicare with advice related to different insurance options. Medicare really is the bread and butter, but they'll work with dual eligible clients, such as those that are eligible for Medicare and Medi-Cal. They are typically very busy during times such as the Medicare annual enrollment period. They're helping people decide whether to enroll in original Medicare, Medicare Advantage plans, as well as switching between Medicare prescription drug plans. The program is run by staff, but they utilize a large contingent of volunteers. I believe last I checked, they have roughly 40 volunteers. And whether it's a staff person doing the Medicare counseling or a volunteer, they're subject to strict registration and training requirements, including initial training and ongoing training requirements. The second program, like I said, sort of goes hand in hand with the first one. It's called Medicare Improvements for Patients and Providers Act. This provides our LIFAP program, same staff, same volunteers with additional funding to assist with enrolling Medicare beneficiaries into plans that into programs that will assist with saving on Medicare costs. So one program is our LIS or extra help, and it assists with saving costs on Medicare prescription drug plans. And then there's also a set of Medicare savings programs, all of which have different eligibility and income requirements.
Hello, everyone. Jeanette Rivia here. Some new faces and some familiar ones, so thank you for welcoming us back. So I'm here to talk about my colleague Lillian's programs, and then I'll talk about mine, so strap in. I'm probably going to be here for a while, but I'm going to try to be very mindful of everyone's time. So one of the programs that we offer under the Older Americans Act is called the Title III-E Family Caregiver Support Program. So this is a program that really supports informal caregivers, not necessarily paid by any other funding sources. So it provides information and community education to caregivers of families, and also assistance to caregivers in gaining access to services, as well as caregiver support groups, training, et cetera, and respite care. Respite care, of course, to prevent caregiver burnout, or if a caregiver might need someone to kind of take look over their care receiver while they run errands or important appointments. Of course, we also provide supplemental services for those family caregivers in the form of assistive devices, emergency cash, material aid, and other items that would assist them with their caregiving responsibilities. Our current provider is also the CRC, or the Caregiver Resource Center of Orange County, which is St. Jude Hospital. And then the other program is Title V, Senior Community Service Employment Program, or CSEP. So this is a program that really caters to seniors who are 55 and above, who might have challenge in obtaining employment. So what they do is they actually place them in host agencies in what is called subsidized employment. So the program pays while they get trained and they get all the necessary experience so that they can be eventually placed in what we call unsubsidized employment, which is an actual they get hired for a job. Yeah, so that's who we are helping. Specific focus for this, or priority areas for the CSEP program, are of course older adults who are 65 and above, older adults who might have had experience being unhoused, veterans, older adults with disabilities. So those are the priority areas for this. But as long as you're 55 and above and you're, you know, if you're interested, we do have some spots available. So now on to my programs. This is the Senior Non-Emergency Medical Transportation Program. It is a mouthful, SNEMT. This provides a coordinated community-based system of non-emergency medical transportation. So these are mainly for, non-medical, doctor's appointments, eye exams, picking up your prescription, going to your regular doctor's appointment, and some exercise programs as well. So these are for seniors who are age 60 and above, And it is a lot easier to get into this program than access OC, or OC access pretty much. And it's a little bit more reasonably priced when it comes to the fare. So I'm kind of biased because it is my program. it's also funded by OCTA and in partnership with some funding from HCA under the Tobacco Settlement Revenue and Measure M. So our service providers for SMEMT is Abrazar and AgeWell. So Abrazar serves areas 1 and 3, which is North and Central West County, and AgeWell provides services to South County. All right, so moving on to the last stretch of my slides here. I am also going to talk about the COVID-19 programs or the supplemental programs that we receive funding for. We are still winding down on some of the funding and services that we received under the American Rescue Plan Act or ARPA. Those actually are supporting existing Older Americans Act programs like our nutrition program, caregiver support program. So all our core programs that are funded by the Older Americans Act. We also are receiving modernization of Older Californians Act or OCA or MOCA. I guess a lot of people take, you know, offense, not offense, like take issue against calling it MOCA, but it is MOCA. Anywho, this is a 3-year funding source that is designed to focus on reestablishing programs that have since been discontinued because of the Great Recession, which was in around 2008. So knowing that it's been like 10 years after as we are relaunching these programs gives us, kind of rejuvenates focus on those programs. Of course, we also are receiving funding from the Older Adults Recovery and Resilience, or OAR. Those are also supporting some existing programs and some new ones. So the existing programs OAR serves or supplements are the Legal Services Program, the Family Caregiver Support Program, and I believe the Older Californians Nutrition and Senior Employment, just sees that. The new component to the OAR is what Aaron mentioned earlier, which is an intergenerational activities program, which really aims to bridge that the divide or bridge the gap between generations and help build understanding. And of course, we have the Nutrition Infrastructure Program. That is a grant specifically for expanding infrastructure for our current elderly nutrition program providers, which are Meals on Wheels and AgeWell, and some local providers as well. So that helps them kind of purchase refrigerated trucks, freezers, et cetera, that would help kind of revamp their, the equipment that they have. All right. And I promise, I think this is my last slide, so we are at the home stretch, guys. So we have several, I'm sure you guys know, several different iPad programs or technology programs. We have Access to Technology, which is a grant from CDA that allows Area Agency on Aging to provide technology and increase broadband and access to its older adults with disabilities. Older adults and people with disabilities, sorry. For ATT, that is winding down for iPad distribution. Actually, we would be on target to distribute 1,250 iPads as of next Thursday. So that would wrap up the iPad distribution part of it. But we still have virtual classes available all throughout the rest of the fiscal year until September 30th, which it might get extended, but I'm not sure yet. The virtual classes are available to any 60-plus resident of Orange County through that setup. We also have the Connections Health, Aging, and Technology, or CHAT program. This is another device distribution program that was spearheaded by CDA, and it actually is in partnership with USC. And really what this is the recipients of the iPads under CHAT actually are required to get surveyed by USC. But that component actually just got waived recently because I think USC got enough respondents. upcoming program, we have digital connections, another device distribution program, and that aims to also provide access to broadband and connectivity. So that's coming soon. I believe that is it. Our providers for access to technology is get set up for virtual lessons and one-on-one device onboarding. So when you receive an iPad under APT, you do get that personal one-on-one onboarding on how to navigate your device and how to start it up, you know, with or get a set up representative. And they also offer tech assistance or tech support when you're, you know, forgot your password or or you get locked out of your iPad. And that, I believe, is all I have. Thank you all so much.
Good morning, everyone. This is the last, after a whole stretch, this is the last time. I'm Pauline, as you all know, and my areas of responsibility include the area plan and aging. So the area plan, if you don't know, is a four-year plan. We are currently in the process of doing the plan for 2024 to 2028. We all should have received an email yesterday with a notice of the public hearing, which will take place on the date, along with a copy of the draft area plan. I will ask you all to please, please, please review that plan prior to March 8th. Don't come with it and go, oh yeah, I haven't got it, haven't had a chance to read it. You know, please, please review it, because it is very important for us in terms of the Office on Aging and how we proceed. There is a requirement for us to have a public hearing and get input from this advisory commission. So I'm still trying to get used to Orange County Older Adults Advisory Commission. It's supposed to be scanning. So area plan basically is a roadmap for the Office on Aging or the Area Agency on Aging, which is the County of Orange, which under the umbrella of the Office on Aging provides programs and services either federally or state funded, direct or indirect programs or services to older adults in Orange County. The plan is updated and linked, so we don't have to go through the whole big plan again, but we just do updates. And the updates come down to us from CDA, and basically tell us, you know, this is what we need you to update. There have been a lot of changes to the layout of the area plan for this year. You will notice when you read it, and they've tried to condense it. Not quite sure they got there with the condensed part of it, but in any event, we put our best foot forward. We've highlighted the programs, we've given them the information we believe that they have asked for. When it gets approved by this, or actually when it comes to you guys for review and we get all of your input, it will then go to the Board of Supervisors for its approval. And the board then, it has to be up with the State of California CDA by May 1st. So that is the area plan. Along with that, Bonnie and I are both part of a, we call a small but mighty team on the master plan for aging at the county level. You may know, actually I'm sure you do know, going back brief history, in 2019, the governor issued an executive order for the creation of a master plan for aging. As a result of that, in January of 2023, the Board of Supervisors commissioned a comprehensive countywide needs assessment, older adults needs assessment, in order to gain input from older adults, adults with disabilities, community organizations, service providers, to gain a better understanding of the holistic needs of the older adults, our older adults in Orange County. The assessment will help us identify gaps in services, issues that need to be addressed, and will serve as kind of a roadmap for the development of the county's master plan for aging. The older adults needs assessment was concluded. The survey portion of it was concluded in December of 2023. We are currently in the process of tabulating the results and doing the analysis. County has not seen them. We have a consultant that has been working on that. Have not seen it yet. Before you ask, when will we get it? I do not want to give a date, because if I give a date, I'm going to be stuck to it. So it's sometime in the future. Stay tuned. That is basically, one more. Older Adults Advisory Commission. You all know me. You all know what my role is in terms of serving this commission. I had the privilege of working with the ad hoc committee for the defined period of time and the defined purpose to review the bylaws. And happy to say that, you know, the bylaws have been passed now, and it kind of sets things in motion for the role of this commission as it moves forward in the future. That's the end of my presentation.
Lots of great information. Thank you to all our staff, our manager. Lots of behind the scenes of work that has to come with our community partners, ensuring that our programs are abiding by regulations. As you've heard through many of our different services, they are really heavily regulated. So there's where there's some modernization coming along, they're providing a little bit of flexibility and innovation. We must abide by certain parameters, right, from our state and federal regulations. However, we're very happy to provide you with this information. I know even thereafter, it was a lot. If you do have any questions, we're here. We can answer them now for you. Our staff are standing by. Shortly, I'm sure we'll get back to our business meeting. However, if something triggers your memory thereafter, we have our call center, as Marco explained to you, our information assistance call center. Call us at any time. If you have questions on services, community, how to engage out in terms of how to access those services and providers, or yourselves, your families, your friends, your community. However, if you have, let's say, a more program-specific administrative type of question on our role, your role, how can we support that? I just want to have a friendly reminder, make sure that we funnel that through our liaison, Ms. Pauline, so that we can get that answer for you and figure out what information needs. Because if you're asking for it, chances are maybe the body as a whole would benefit from that information, and you want to make sure that we coordinate that through a single point of contact. But questions?
And I'm really cognizant that we basically have a lot to discuss still on our agenda.
Yeah.
So if we could just keep it to one or two questions. And thank you all so much. Thank you all for coming. Thank you, Pauline and Claudia, for all your amazing work.
Thank you so much. And follow us on social media. We have our Instagram, our Twitter, and our Facebook websites as well. We'll be trying to post upcoming information on programs, events, anything that is obviously knowledge to our public. So thank you so much, everyone. Appreciate it.
Do we have one or two questions?
Go back about three slides. I use the term equity. Does that mean we're committed to unequal treatment under the law?
Did you say unequal or sorry?
I mean, that's what equity implies.
No, our goal is to make sure that it's equitable access to all older adults, individuals with disabilities, caregivers, that our services and programs and information is distributed equally and fairly throughout our county and our programs available to those that have certain eligibility, of course, right? We have to abide by that for regulations, but this is accessible to every and all residents of our county.
Okay.
Thank you.
The gentleman that, I don't remember your name, with the legal.
Yeah.
In many of our cities, we have this is popping up that take care of elderly. They give care to them. I've seen abuse in their personal threats. She was elderly, and they would leave her in her adult diaper all night wet.
That's
awesome. Well, I'm just wondering if does your organization deal with any regulation or any interaction with these places to make sure they're doing things right?
You know, I'm like, when veterans deal with
instance, it doesn't occur in a long-term care facility. If it's outside of a long-term care facility, so if it happens, it's on my home, that would be under this jurisdiction. Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you.
Adult protective services, if it's in a private home, if it's in a life facility, then the ombudsman investigate complaints. Thank you so much again. Let's give them a round of applause. All right. Well, we have a new practice of talking about our senior center and city liaison updates, but in the interest of time, instead of going around the whole circle like we would like to do as often as possible, maybe just a few people that have something unusual or marked to share about what's been going on in their senior centers can share. I'll just start very briefly. I went to the San Clemente Senior Center. Like I said, I was going to last time. I gave a presentation on the 1-800 number and the information and referral. The residents there were really interested, and then they put the information for the call center into the San Clemente newspaper.
I made a presentation to the Irvine Senior Commission and then about the change in bylaws, et cetera, and then specifically requested that representative be added to their permanent agenda, and I was told. So I don't know if anybody else is experiencing that at the city commission level, but I can come and make public comments, but I cannot be added to the permanent agenda of this
event. You may just have to take it to the people, Rachel, and not go through official committees.
Just share it with anybody else if we get a lot of
that. Yeah, let us know.
Yeah. Okay. I have a couple of things. We have lost Tony Rodella and Victor Mendez. We need
that's not a discussion I have.
I'm sorry. Then I'm out of order.
Yep. Okay.
I have been talking with most of the senior centers in the county about the Orange County Aging Services Collaborative Survey, commissioned and funded by Equity and OC, part of the Orange County Healthcare Agency. This is a different survey than what you saw last year from Advance OC. A little bit different data set also will be used to inform the process for the master plan for aging and other very important programming through the Founding Healthcare Agency. I would like to ask everyone in the room who is over 65 to fill out a survey before you leave today. And as you are talking to your senior centers, let them know this is a really important effort. And sometimes we have trouble getting them to respond or participate. So I need your help in getting this revving up the interest in it. We have to have about 3,000 surveys from across the county completed by the end of February, and the demographics will very definitely reflect the census. So please take a survey, complete it before you leave, and leave it with me if you're over 65.
So take another one and leave with them.
Yes, you may, and just remind them about it because they're all getting
different on their own.
Well, I think we'd rather talk to them about it so that we can make sure they understand how it's supposed to be distributed and how they get it back to us. So if you can ask them to please pay attention to the missives they get from either Jocelyn Rubio or from Patty Mouton, then that would be really, yeah, it's very short. It takes about 4 minutes, 11 questions, and it's critically important information. So thank you, and help us out in the field. Pauline, can I send something to you to go out to all of this body that reflects what we are sending to the senior centers?
Sure.
Okay. So watch for something from Pauline.
Yes, Dave.
Two quick things. Any of you that are sitting in the city, city councils, we just got, we're in the process of going to get a grant for the senior centers to the tune of about $7,000 to audit the facility. These grants are available if you're interested. Talk to me afterward. I'll put you in contact with my director and I can tell you how to get them. The other thing, I'm a director of our senior center program.
which would basically take the presentation.
Oh, so your education program.
The education program would basically take some of the different things we have here and make them available to the senior centers to a group there. I think it'd be good for all senior centers to be involved, that kind of an education program.
Thank you. Anything else? Oh, yes, Ken.
We started our no-cost tax preparation services that Irvine Senior Centers with Tax Week. So I encourage you to just get the word out. And there are senior centers throughout the county, but it's great service. And so we're up and running now.
Awesome. Thank you. Is there a
comment
on that?
No, we primarily here is with seniors, but everyone's welcome.
I mean, are you the 55 and older or the 65 and older senior?
55 and older.
Okay. Okay. Hopefully, next time we'll have enough time to go around. Anna, you have something?
Yes, at our senior centers, the Country Laguna Niguel, they have courses, and they had this card making craft.
Hi.
For Valentine's, and inside the box is Chuck.
Very cute. Okay.
So, and we're very proud of the Yellow Cab program from your home to the senior center and back is free. And for $250, you can go visit your friends, your relatives, your events each way. So, we're very proud of that. Let me see what else. Oh, so with the cab, you can have free, get to the senior center for free, have lunch, and go back. So that pertains to food insecurities, helps with that issue.
That's wonderful. And I know that we received information from Laguna Niguel's updated senior mobility program for transportation. So that's another thing that I would encourage everyone to share with your senior center in case they want to look at revamping their transportation program. So that's
right.
The kind of things that we can do during our visit, talking about the survey, transportation, and making sure that they know that we have a name too. So, all right. So I would like to move to discussion item. The first one is that Claudio will be nominating someone to join the commission, which is called, let's see, so we have a lot of acronyms today, don't we? The Aging Council of California. So basically all of the advisory commissions for the AAA, the Area Agencies on Aging, get together periodically to discuss what's going on throughout the state. It used to involve travel, now it's virtual. It's a commitment of four meetings a year?
I believe so.
Four meetings a year. Elizabeth has very kindly said that I would be great in this role, but I would like someone else to please volunteer to do it since I'm busy with chair duties. So you'll get to hear as a volunteer what other AAA advisory commissions are doing, share what we're up to, like how we've remapped our bylaws and our name, and also learn from best practices from other parts of the state. So I would like to know who would be interested in that. Otherwise, we're gonna have to call me.
If no one else is interested, I will do it, but only if there's somebody else who wants.
You're already running around like crazy.
A little.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Everyone's like, no, I can't.
Debbie would be perfect.
Oh, Debbie would be really good. Yeah. What am I doing? Bodies like this are doing drug help. Yes. Yeah, you were voluntold. Thank you, Debbie.
Get in the eye.
Okay, on to B, discuss member recruitment with focus on underrepresented communities. As Patty was beginning to say, we did look at our liaison list, and we are in need to have representatives in Santa Ana, Garden Grove, Anaheim, and Westminster as priority areas in outreach and Huntington Beach. So those are parts of our county that we don't currently have on this commission. If you know someone in those areas, please let Crystal or I know so that we can do outreach.
I know that Supervisor Sarmiento's office is going to be helping us because this is your area, so that's wonderful. We really would like to have people that live in those communities that are either older adult, aging services professional, or family caregivers joining our group.
Fountain Valley isn't quite as much a problem. I am covering way too many senior centers personally, and I can't get to all of them adequately. So I need help in Garden Grove. We need help in Anaheim, Santa Ana, Westminster, and Huntington Beach. So even if you don't live in those cities, if you could take on a little extra and be the liaison to a senior center in one of these cities, in addition to what you have already been assigned, I would appreciate the help.
Yes, and then we need interim help for Patty, and then over the next few months, we want to get people that actually live in those communities to join our group.
And what do they actually do there, Patty? Maybe you can explain that to the folks.
Well, they take information from this body to the senior center. They get to know the leadership at the senior center so that there can be free exchange of information. They bring back in the senior center interesting information about programming and services that have come up. And they basically are feet on the street so that this body is really very much interactive with our senior center throughout the county. If there's an educational event that needs to be shared, if there's anything happening that the senior center needs to know about, then we are the feet on the street to take that message.
Perfect.
Thank you.
We have a question.
Yes, I'm my really institutions with Santa Ana, so I could take on Santa.
It's okay. There are, and I'm sorry, I can't
say.
Robin Smith?
Nelson.
I will reach out to you because there are four senior centers in Santa Ana, and I don't want to assume the table.
Just send me the information.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
I'll take one of the stories and go.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
And your name is?
Marianne Klinger.
Thank you, everyone. This is wonderful. We're better together.
Anybody in Westminster?
Did Debbie volunteer to be the tech?
Yes.
Okay. Just gotta stay on.
Yes.
Debbie, you may want to talk to Elizabeth and see what
you
volunteered for.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm cognizant we're running behind on time. So any other discussion on that? Yeah. Okay. Thank you, everyone, and thank you, Patty. All right. So we're on to the discussion on legislation, regulation, and budget tracking. We had a request from the former Senior Citizens Engagement Committee members to have an ad hoc committee meeting on a regular basis on legislation. We discussed this at the executive board, and that doesn't work with the Brown Act rules, as we heard again today. So what the executive board has decided is to have a standing item on our agenda of legislation, regulation, and budget tracking discussed during this group.
Oh, and so you envision us just providing a handout in the future, Meredith, or something like that?
And during certain times of the year, we'll probably want to spend a little bit more time discussing things, if you know those times of the year.
Sure.
Regulations happen year-round, and I do that for my full-time job, so I'm happy to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And then we can see if we want to try to work through the Office on Aging with the Board of Supervisors, Legislative Affairs Office, on items that we want to bring to their attention. So you okay on that? All right, status update on the Office on Aging brochure, QR code, and website. After our last month's excellent presentation from Marco on the call center, a lot of people were really interested in bringing more detailed information about the 1-800 number, the app, and the website to the senior centers and to the city managers and electeds. I was able to exchange an email with Marco a couple of days ago. The public information officer is needing to do approval for us to get more PowerPoint presentations, and admin still has not been able to do the QR code
and more information. So we'll continue to follow up on that. I think that'll be really good to give presentations with official collateral on the call center and the website and the app. All right, and then also I wanted to talk about the 2024 goals and objectives. When we were having all of our bylaws discussions, we talked about having an ad hoc committee to focus on the items in the bylaws, Article 3B, our broad goals of this body. I am going to create an ad hoc committee, and it will be chaired by Rachel. Mm-hmm. And it will be limited time. We are looking forward to sunset by June. So it'll have a very limited scope on looking at the goals and objectives in Article 3B and coming up with some strategy on how the ad hoc committee would suggest we approach that and then bringing it back to this body.
And so, Ken has indicated an interest in serving. Dave has indicated an interest in serving. Is there anyone else who has an interest in serving on the committee? Okay, gentlemen, I will reach out to them. And one of the issues that is written is in that regard is that we might not have quite enough information about where to focus until we hear the presentation on the area. But I will start that process tomorrow, Monday, and we'll see what we can do to pull things together. Nathan, are you interested?
Yes.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much for everyone for volunteering and for leading that effort. All right, so on to number 11, share items. The first thing that I would like to share is that Crystal and I will be going together to the Board of Supervisors. We're going to check calendars and pick a date in March to give an update to them during their public comment on what we've been up to, what our plans are, and thank them for approving our new bylaws. So we'll let you know how that goes.
When you say you have to get a public comment, you mean 3 minutes? I think we deserve more than 3 minutes.
We're going to begin at the beginning, so we're going to go and do public comment. We'll see how it goes. That's what we were told to do during the
week. 3 minutes. We need more than 3 minutes.
Oh, we can do each 3 minutes. Yeah. So we're up to 6 minutes. Yeah. I also wanted to share that the executive board talked about new member orientation. That's something that was done in the past. We want to bring it back, and Sandy has volunteered with new members of this body, so we have several of you to do an orientation and answer any questions that you may have. So she'll be getting in touch with you, and thank you, Sandy, for taking that on.
Can anyone be included retroactively to say that you can be
I also wanted to update, there was a clause in our old bylaws that we removed that the Social Security Administration would have someone that was permanently assigned to this body that did not have attendance requirements. We removed that, and out of a courtesy, I reached out to Jeffrey Rodriguez. His Social Security Administration email bounced back that it's no longer active. So we wish him well. I hope everything is okay, but at this point, we will remove him from membership. And so that's another seat that we can use to fill with other members of the public. Mm-hmm. I think that was it for my update. Oh, and also there's been a change in our scheduling. It appears the Office of Aging needed to make a change for the dark month. So please make note that we are going to be dark in July instead of our normal June. If you've distributed the schedule to senior centers and other folks, you're going to need to give them an update that, don't show up here in the wrong month. So June we're on, July we're not.
It's usually me wrong. Shows up wrong.
And if you're here, you can all go out to lunch or something together. Or breakfast.
Don't talk about it.
But you can't talk about anything. All right, let's go on to number 12, Office on Aging updates.
All right, thank you. I will keep it brief. Lots of information today, so a lot of it included one of the updates is the area plan. We will have that public hearing March 8th, and we'll be following your regular meeting. So we encourage you all to attend, be present, take a look at that draft so that we can receive some feedback and public comments as we are required for the regulations to include public comments, feedback, recommendations, and such as part of that. Also coming up in March is Nutrition Month. So Office on Aging, along with our partner at Healthcare Agency and our nutrition service providers, working on a pamphlet information that will be distributed to those that are in service and are accessing information on nutrition through that nutrition program. This brochure is going to serve as just nutrition education to support Nutrition Month, services, resources, such as CalPred, how to apply, and all that good. So as we get those approved, you'll probably start to see that throughout your community centers, senior centers. The service providers will be providing that through that month of March. Also wanted to update the Older Americans Month in May is going to be coming up. So starting to think about some ideas on how we want to support. The state has released, Administration of Community Living has released the theme, which is connecting, stay connected. So we will be sure to start working on some media, some posts, some updates on that so that we can support the Older the Americans Month in May. Also, have an important update to share with you. That's relating to some of the changes coming up for our office. A very happy but yet sad update I want to share. Miss Pauline, Mrs. Pauline Coleman, has announced her upcoming retirement.
Oh,
so we, as happy as I am and excited, and I told her, take me with you, I want to travel too. I know that very well deserved after 29 years of service to our county and public service. It is now time for her to join her husband in the travels and enjoying retirement that comes. I told her any opportunity that she can come back, we will always welcome her back, whether it be short-term, limited, extra help, however that might seem. Don't want to see you leave, Pauline. Lots of great. I know that she's worked tremendous efforts with you all in communicating and being that point of contact for us. So it is a huge loss for Office on Aging, but very much excited, Pauline. Thank you so much for your service. This is her last meeting.
Oh.
And if you meet us, when retirement is, Pauline?
March 7th.
Oh my God, well, just when you go. We miss you, but we're so happy for you.
Well, I honestly, thank you all. It truly has. I know it's been a short period of time, but it truly, truly has been my honor and privilege to serve with each and every one of you. You are a tremendous group of individuals, and that is evidenced by the hard work and dedication that you have to the needs of the older adult community in Orange County. Continue the good work. You're doing phenomenal. Hopeful that new members who have come on will be able to, you know, join the force and see how well this group actually performs. They're really incredible. I will miss you all. I do plan to stay in touch with you, and thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you for everything. So with that, of course, I will be updating you all on coverage in terms of our new contact, your point of contact, and supporting our efforts through the advisory commission. And keeping things moving and communications moving forward. So as soon as I'm able to provide that update, we'll do. We'll let you know. Pauline, thank you, thank you, thank you. Can't thank you enough. I have one more month to squeeze as much out of her and all that knowledge that's going. But thank you. And I just want to say thank you, all of you, for your patience. I know today there is a lot of presentation, a lot of information, so just greatly appreciate your eyes and ears and your advocacy in our community. So that is all that I have.
Thank you so much. All right. Anyone, let's see, do we have any burning announcements for the presentation schedule?
No, we've got everything covered except for April. Barbara has caregiver resource center, Zach Light. I have Winnington, Karen Ensley, from Veteran Services, and June 14th, we've been following along the Disability Rights Center. I'm just working on
it. And it's okay if we don't have someone for April, because we could discuss more about what we're doing at the senior centers and with the city managers.
Okay, let me know that for the. I brought more copies of the manager magazine. They're on the calendar over here. Please take them.
Okay. Do we have any announcements by turning your time sheet, turning your mileage sheet?
I've got mileage.
Survey the package. Survey the surveys. Okay. Any announcement? Okay, I'm adjourning. Okay.